Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore positively into a football week here that has a lot of extenuating circumstances with injuries and whatnot. Luke is out in Owings Mills. Any breaking news will happen first on the WNST tech service. That is all brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. And, of course, our friends at GBMC provide our hotline, which this week might as well be the injury hotline regarding Lamar Jackson and Ronnie Stanley and Roquan Smith and Nnamdi Matabike and Lord knows with Marlon Humphrey. But we're going to play some football here. And the Houston Texans are coming to Baltimore this week. Always makes me remember the Houston Oilers. And this guy here, I met him at the very dawn of my radio show, which is 27 years we've had WNST, 34 and a half years I've been on the air. He fetched me at one point, Bubba McDowell, to come on my show because when I went on the radio in 1991, we weren't in the NFL and we were never going to be in the NFL. And nobody ever thought there'd be a thing called the Ravens all these 30 years later. Chip Namias was the Houston Oilers PR director that I absolutely harassed somewhere out on Westheimer in Houston, Texas. He got Jack Pardee on my show and we've spent a lifetime of knowing each other. He went on to become a Hollywood PR person. If you ever saw Adam Sandler on our show or nearly got Burt Reynolds, came it's close to getting Burt Reynolds on, but did bring Snoop by my set at 1.2. We welcome Chip back onto the program because when I think of Houston, I think of you, and I went to the Hollywood Bowl a couple weeks ago, and you're all baseball playoffed up, and I thought, if I'm ever going to have Chip on, I might as well have him on the week we're playing Houston something. That's what I thought.
Good to see you, Nestor. It's been a long time. We've known each other. It's been fun.
Well, you were at a football game when I text you and ask you to come on. Now, you make your life in South Florida. I know you well enough to know you have like a whole soccer background and a football background with the Dolphins and Don Shula. But I only knew you through Houston. Houston's like a small little snapshot of this thing you did. You were in Tampa. I wore some creamsicle costas for you here. I mean, you made a life in sports and you're kind of out of sports, but they kind of suck you in because you're a Yankees guy and you go to sporting events and stuff. I hear you as mouthy about modern sports, but you have a great reason to be. You worked in a lot of different places in a lot of different ways in this game.
Yeah. I mean, I've been working in sports media and sports PR for, since 1977. So that's
almost 50. Time. I almost said 50, but I didn't want to make you mad. 48.
Yeah, we're 48. Yeah. Hard to believe. It's been quick. But yeah, I had three stops in the NFL. And then after that, got to, through some friends in the NFL, got to be an NFL replay official for about 20 years. And that was fun. And doing the Hollywood stuff has been fun. So it's been great. And yep, I did move from one coast to the other about 2 years ago from LA to Fort Lauderdale, which is where I am now. And here we are.
Well, you went to that Dolphins game, man. First things first, the league itself, you pointed out online after I invited you on that you haven't been to many games as like a paying fan. And since they threw me out 4 years ago, I haven't been to a football game. And it's really weird after 30 years of being in every locker room, every place I am. But the whole accountability, the PR side, the localization, that we need to sell tickets that Joe Robbie would go through or the Culverhouse family or Bud Adams and their markets. And it was your job, not just to keep the players safe and make the right messaging and all that, but it really was in a long-term play of let's make fans for life. Let's be honest with people because like, they're still going to be here all their lives and they're going to hold us accountable. Now the lying part, the dishonesty part of all of it and the monetization part that's so overt, whether you're waking up in Dublin at 9:30 in the morning or they're playing in Brazil at 10 o'clock at night, or even when they're playing in Miami and they had uniforms on. Chip, I swear to God, I was in State Fair getting carry out for my wife in Catonsville. I looked up at the two TVs and the both games were going on. And I'm like, who's playing? I could, and I saw a Bengal logo and I saw the orange and I'm like, what are the Bengals wearing? And it turns out it's the Dolphins. I mean, the first things first, you walked into a building and I'm thinking like, did you recognize the Dolphins? Which is strange, man.
Yeah. It's funny. I detested the uniforms the Dolphins were wearing last night. I won't make any bones about it. And I probably got about seven texts in the first quarter from friends around the country saying, "What the hell is up with those Dolphin uniforms? They're god awful." And they were god awful. But as you talked about the commercialization, it's another chance, to sell alternate jerseys. And, I don't know. I don't know why they do it. The teams weren't recognizable last night as the Dolphins and the Jets, as you mentioned, and I touched on in a social media post this morning. That was only the second game as a NFL game as a fan that I had been to since 1982. My passion right now, football wise and basketball wise, is the logo on my chest, my alma mater, the Sad Sack University of Florida Gators. At least Sad Sack in football. National champions in basketball, so that's good.
Well, it and I would say, well, they spent the most, right? And you could say that out loud now in college and not offend anybody from Kentucky or SMU or any of the places that had the death penalty for money and paying players. I mean, it's a different game. I mean, I had Sean Merriman on earlier this week, just talking about the Terps and NIL and how the Terps have gotten good. And my tower engineer, who's one of the people really responsible for a lot of my career, I never give him love, so I will. Jim Richardson, J.R. Richardson, who is my tower engineer and has been for 27 years, down here in Towson, Maryland, we found a little radio station. He is a Gator maniac. Like he never, I never have a conversation with my tower engineer without having to talk about, because you ain't Gator, you Gator bait. And so I know all about that. So the Gator thing, the college thing in a town like Baltimore is just, it's a little foreign. I mean, the Terps have never really caught on here over a lifetime in the way that you think they might.
You don't get behind mighty Towson State or Towson
I'm
University.
Coppin sponsor. I love Coppin. I love Towson had a bomb scare earlier this week. Crazy stuff going. No, I mean, I love small college. I've been to all of those games. I have their coach. I do all of that. I'm just saying from a passion play, there's something about being in the South, especially in the state of Florida, but you got to
Yeah.
anywhere in the South, you got to declare a school. Once you go to past North Carolina, somebody's got to have a school.
Yeah, obviously the Northeast Corridor is not, known traditionally as being as passionate about college sports as the Southeast. And yeah, absolutely.
Well, you had to adopt a whole new ethos if you're a college sports fan over the last 5 years with NIL. The professional ranks, and I want to ask you this, and I'm not being snide, and this isn't even about Chad Steele throwing me out or Kevin Byrne, who never would have thought to throw me out. What was your job when you did the job? Like when you take a job with the Dolphins, the Buccaneers, the Oilers, I'm sure I'm leaving something out, places you've been in the NASL back, all the jobs you had, the job you had as PR director or communications, whatever the title, vice presidency, it feels to me over my lifetime of having enough press passes to wallpaper any wall in your Floridian home, over 45 years of having boxes of press passes from all the sports and everywhere I just feel like I'm not a get off my lawn. I like change. I'm liberal. I'm good with all that. I just sometimes I wake up on days and I don't recognize what sports is trying to do in a market. Like, I don't understand what the Orioles are really trying, other than win and sell stuff. But the authenticity and the hand-to-hand combat that like a Larry Lucchino had here a generation ago to turn Camden Yards in my community from little sleepy Orioles village and to 3.6 million people coming to games. I felt that explosion here, but the way sports works now and social media and players and agents and NIL and they're being handled when they're 12 years old, the whole thing is very unrecognizable to me. And I know it's not going back to the way it was, but what was your job?
Well, it was a lot more quaint back then, and it wasn't, when I think about it wasn't all that long ago. I mean, my former intern with the Buccaneers is now their chief communications officer, and he mentioned me recently that when I my last year there were a total of 27 employees. Now there's 384. So these teams went from ma and pop operations where, we went to work in shorts and I had a conniption when the marketing guy wanted to put a sponsorship backdrop on our press conferences. That would be small potatoes now. But, these businesses went from being run like corner grocery stores to run like, IBMs and Xeroxes. And, it's a whole different thing. And then obviously the players getting their own voice on social media and having a way to connect and communicate their thoughts directly with the fans. And, a lot of players thinking, they don't need the media anymore. The media is not a, a necessary thing for them in their eyes. And that's totally changed that dynamic, as you learned a little bit up in Baltimore. But back when I did the job, you were basically, you had two or three responsibilities. You were servicing the media and helping them, do their job on a daily basis. You were the spokesman for the organization and the front-facing face when something came up and commenting on it. And you were, running special event game day operations, whether it was during the game, a game when you were running the press box and the stat crew and overseeing the photographers on the field and all that kind of stuff. And of course, doing press releases and keeping statistics. Those were your basic jobs. And now it's so much different. And a lot of us who worked in PR back in those days for sports franchises, and some who covered both eras then and now, those of us who aren't doing it now anymore are consider ourselves very fortunate and lucky that we were around during the golden era and not around now. I don't know that I would enjoy my job the way I did then if I was doing the same job now, because it's a lot more contentious. It's a lot more, I don't know if strategic is the right word, but there's a lot more opportunity for conflict.
Chip Namias is my guest and my friend, longtime PR man in sports and in Hollywood, and helping. God, it just fell off my tongue. Helping. I wrote that word down. You said your job was to help the media. Help the media do what?
Yeah, I mean, help the media cover the team, make it, back then you were kind of, as a PR guy, you were kind of a red velvet rope gatekeeper. I could decide who, to a smaller extent than now, who came into the tent, who covered the team. And when they did cover the team, you wanted the team to come off positively. So you wanted to do whatever you could to help the media do their job and kind of curry a relationship with them and kind of work hand in hand to help them not promote the team, because that's a bad word when you're talking about the media, but to do their job and report on the happenings of the team. And sometimes there was conflict. If a guy wrote a story that was negative about a player, and the player would have a little tantrum and say, "I'm never talking to that guy again." And I used to bring in the player and the writer into a room, close the door, and basically make it like a professional wrestling survival match where nobody was going to leave that room until those two guys shook hands and buried the hatchet, so that you didn't have long-standing grudges that were being held. But
I participated in that, by the way. I had one of those with Davey Johnson and John Maroon and Roberto Alomar and Rafael Palmeiro at one point. And Alomar was literally the liaison. Alomar sat between me and Palmeiro and tried to fix things. You know what I mean? Like, literally, I can't. These days, they just throw you out, or they vilify you, or they. It's. To me, on the outside, now that I am an outsider, not a real media member anymore, Chip, watching the reality television part, not just of the Ravens or the Orioles, I'm talking about sports in general, that Brian Billick back in 2000 allowed Steve Sable's group to come in and make Hard Knocks. And then Hard Knocks became this unbelievably, awfully sanitized show that just was, by the time they got to the Texans, J.J. Watt's throwing tires, and it looks like the Incredible Hulk. I mean, it wasn't reality in the way that we thought it was going to be. And I think reality TV has moved 25 years further along, and all of these sports teams now, whether it's the ceremonial pen that signs the contract in front of the backdrop, the product placement. I mean, I've seen outtakes now where they like literally reshoot pieces like Hollywood because somebody walks out into the hallway into a shot that they're trying to. I mean, they're literally just doing internal reality TV. Their brands are all snarky in some way and making fun of the other team. Just sort of, it's sophomoric to me as a 57-year-old, I guess it has some appeal to a 16-year-old girl on TikTok, or they think it's going to sell a fan. But I am amused, bemused, and in some ways, I just hit the escape button because I think the social media voices of sports teams can really be annoying. Even if you like the team, maybe even the Florida Gators, you follow it all and think, this is a little annoying. This is a little too much, even for me, if I love the Yankees, to follow the teams, the sanitized version of the rah, 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 shish, boom, bah that goes above and beyond fandom and into, ooh, it's making me itch a little bit. And because product play, just all of it makes me itch a little bit to see 50 images of guys in suits getting off of planes to sell a Zip sponsorship for the Ravens.
Well, first you mentioned Brian Billick. We got to give him a shout out for possibly being the only coach in sports history who went from being an assistant PR guy to being a coach. So, you got to like Brian Billick for that.
And a late round draft pick as well.
But yeah, every time there's a hype sports documentary coming out about a specific athlete or whatever. And you're excited to see it when you first hear about it. You get less excited when you find out that the subject of the documentary is also the executive producer of the documentary. So, and you're right, you mentioned Hard Knocks. I mean, I don't know how many years Hard Knocks has been on, but for the first batch of years, I loved it because even though I had, lived it, it was really cool to kind of see it realistically brought to the TV screen. But the Hard Knocks that's airing now, and certainly the one that aired this year with the Bills, bears no distant relative status to the Hard Knocks that we used to know. I
So
mean,
then you know it's not real anymore. Well, even for fans our age that have seen behind the curtains, you see this and you see it as facetious. I don't. It's like reality fiction to some degree, and it's just weird to me. It's not worth my time, Chip. That's the honest to God truth,
I don't know that it's not real, but it's certainly not spontaneous, and it's certainly planned. I mean, how many years has it been on Hard Knocks since we actually a staple of Hard Knocks used to be a head coach cutting a guy in his office? How many years has it been since you saw a guy get cut on Hard Knocks? 10. So it's just all the things that made it great and interesting as a spontaneous vehicle. It's now really kind of a propaganda vehicle, and the teams get to screen the episodes before they air and take out anything that they want to take out, and it's just a different show.
Chip Namius is here. He's a longtime PR man. So your Houston years, I hit you this week because we're playing the Texans, and I thought it'd be good to have Chip on, talk a little this and that. And I was even going to wear my Derrick Henry Oiler jersey, but I think that's a whammy on the Ravens, so I won't do that. But the Oiler memories and moving a franchise, one of the things about PR, and certainly here when Bob Loeffler's running PR and they're trying to get the Colts out of town and Irsay's trying to get Mayflowers in. I mean, you were in some contentious spots too, where part of the PR and part of not having Justin Tucker be a serial predator in your community, or Ray Rice punch his wife in a glass elevator where there's video evidence that everyone in the building lied about and nobody lost their job. A decade later, I look at this franchise in Baltimore and I say, the notion that they got $600 million in the last few years of civic money here to kick the media out of the press box. The Kevin Byrne press box is I call it the little box. It's a tiny little press box up in the corner now that they've gotten their money and the citizens have paid for it. But the PR part of the Houston Oilers and of the Tampa Bucks playing in the big sombrero and never filling it up and trying to sell tickets and trying to sell enthusiasm. You came from some hard scrabble places. I mean, you were in Miami after they won the Super Bowl and had Don Shula and Dan Marino and like all of that. But you went to some other places where like the NFL was a tougher sell. And Baltimore could have been a much tougher sell the second time around. In Houston, it's been a tougher sell the second time around. This community just embraced it, bought all the PSLs 30 years later. They've never really had to sell a ticket here or know how to sell a ticket here. But man, in Tampa and in Houston, Arizona, some of these places where the NFL went, even Nashville, where the Oilers went, Jacksonville, Carolina, where they didn't come here. It was more hand to hand with not just the media and the local media, but businesses and regular fans. And how much are those tickets? And are they good guys? And in racist communities, where just things that have happened here over 25 or 30 years, where the NFL feels like an automatic everywhere. Wherever you and Kevin Byrne and Scott Burch told all the old school guys that were trying to really. We need to be good corporate community citizens here, because the most important thing we're going to do is still be here tomorrow and the next day and the next day. I don't feel like any of these entities behave in that fashion. And I don't just mean the Yankees or whatever, or the Dodgers. And I was there last week, and the Dodgers feel really community oriented when I'm there. It doesn't feel like insert ATM as much as it could feel that way. And I feel like a lot of teams are that way now. But the corporate part of making the money and the goodwill of keeping the peace in a community. You had a couple of jobs where that was really difficult to do.
Well, I mean, it usually came down to like in Houston, I excuse me, I left about a year before the team moved, but I was there during the threatening the community years when, Bud Adams, the owner of the team at the time, was saying, I need a new stadium. If I don't get a new stadium, I'm out of here. And he was traveling around the country with his son-in-law, meeting in other communities, and and basically the era, which I guess it's a good thing it doesn't really exist in sports anymore, or recently we haven't seen it, where teams are holding guns to the heads of communities and threatening to take their team away if they don't get fill in the blank. We haven't seen much of that recently, but we sound a little bit like you alluded to it earlier, get off my lawn type guys. I mean, unfortunately, sometimes things change, and you said you embrace change, but I don't always embrace change. I was talking to a guy, Mark Berman, who was a longtime sports anchor in Houston for almost 40 years, and was the only TV guy I've ever seen in the country who broke as many stories as print guys did. And he was talking about an old Oiler, Mike Rozier, was in town last week and called Mark because he was playing golf in Houston. Mike lives in New Jersey. And he told Berman to come out and say hi to him. So Berman got in his car and drove 45 minutes just to say hi to Mike Rozier. And Mark was talking about how those relationships, even though they could be contentious at times between media member and athlete back in the era of the 80s or the 90s, there was still a closeness there because the media guys were in the locker room every day. It was much more informal. They were just hanging out in the locker room, talking to the
You know
players.
what it is? It's the humanization.
Well, they were
That
establishing relationships with the players, even though
every
the
Raven
players.
person that ever knew me thought of me as a human if they were a good human. You know what I mean? Like, so that part of you have a family, you have a wife, you have kids. Oh, you have kids. I was here the day you got drafted. Hey, where's a good place to get wings in town, or a good place to get a crab cake, or
Right.
like all of that. And to your point, there's not a weekend that goes by that I don't have a Raven alum reach to me. I mean, I literally, that doesn't call me when they're in town,
Well, those relationships are not formed anymore because of the corporatization of the teams and the way everything is very stringent. You don't get an opportunity to kind of become, I don't know if I'm going to use the friends, but friendly with the people that you cover. And it's the same thing in other areas. I talk with people like Kevin Byrne and other PR guys. We have about 35 former NFL PR guys. We're on a text chain, and we talk via text. And a lot of us, if I was to make an AP or UPI top 25 list of my best friends in life, I'd say probably at least a third, if not half of them, are PR guys. And I talk to guys, that are PR guys in sports now, and none of their best friends are PR guys. They barely know the other PR guys because there's not an opportunity to go. We used to go to PR meetings for a week, and hang out with each other, or Super Bowl for 2 weeks and hang out with each other. It's not just with the PR guy to players or media to players. It's all of it. The opportunity to make personal, long-lasting relationships in this business is simply not the same as what it used to be. Not, for some people who are watching this saying, we'll say, so who cares about that? But, just the personal relationship aspect of the business is not what it was, not even close.
Well, anyone to see the atrophy the Orioles here would see what bad ownership, bad relationships with the community, with the media, with former players, with not even, he couldn't get along with Brooks Robinson. You know what I mean?
Well, and
Like, you know what I mean? When that happens, that is just so anti everything good franchises and good people and good PR people and how sports got built, I guess. That's how the Florida Gators got built, even as a university. It's just earning loyalty, not demanding it. I mean, on a day when Trump's in front of the military demanding it, but earning respect, earning loyalty, earning your keep, or earning the money we give you, earning the time that we've given, earning a friendship, or like all of those things were fundamental. They're just not. And then these places are empty and you wonder why baseball's struggling. You know what I mean? You wonder why, and ticket prices are up and beers are up and all of that. It really is. We're in an earthquake point for sports where the women's sports coming along, but I don't know that more money's coming into sports or more time is coming, maybe more gambling money's coming into it, but on a hand-to-hand combat basis, for every Towson or Coppin or Loyola, for every Maryland or Rutgers, I'm thinking Indiana University's football program, the things that aren't frontline but are backline, let alone hockey or UFC or all these places that are trying to make money in entertainment, the part about the jersey you wear and the laundry is some sort of I love my town, I love my team, I love my player, but there was a provincial regional part of that in sports that the Raiders have transcended. They could play their games on the moon, right? You know what I mean? The Cowboys, they've become international brands where, brands like the Bengals and brands like the Cardinal, but more local regional brands in the NFL, they feel like they don't need anybody or anything because they're selling out stadiums in Brazil.
Well, first of all, you're in a textbook market for, as far as I know, in the entire history of sports, there's never been a closer relationship between team and community than there was between the Colts and the city of Baltimore in the 50s and 60s. That, to my knowledge, and I'm not from Baltimore, has never been replicated anywhere in sports. So that is the all-time, great chapter and an example of a team, of a community wrapping their arms around athletes and a team, and the team and the athletes wrapping their arms around the community. Nothing will ever top what you guys had in Baltimore anywhere in the country. But as far as the commercialization, when I was at the game last night as a fan and walking around outside the stadium before the game and being in the concourses and in the stadium, whatever they're doing to commercialize the game, it sure as hell is working because everybody I saw was wearing expensive Dolphins crap, jerseys, hats, shoes. I mean, I've never seen that kind of immersion. I mean, it was unusual if you saw somebody who wasn't wearing anything that had to do with the teams. So whatever they're doing, it's working because, as you said, the relationships may not be the same. The relationship between community and team may not be the same, but the tickets are being sold at very high prices. The sponsorships are being sold at very high prices. The merchandise is being sold. The TV time is being sold. So if you're strictly looking at the bottom line, it's working.
And the presentation of it makes it such that even being thrown out after 30 years of doing this professionally, watching it on TV, it comes on, it goes off, I stop it, I start it, I pee, I go get a beer, I do, and against the $400 every Sunday my wife and I would spend to go sit in the upper deck in the front row seats that Chad Steele threw me out of, I keep the money and I say to myself, well, I still saw the game. I see it better. I get replays. Now, especially if you're in the stadium and something goes against the Ravens, they won't put the replay up, right, on the screen. So there is a point for me where the home presentation, as I sit here while I talk to you watching baseball, there is a point where when I go to a baseball game now, and I know you're a big Yankees fan, It's not even about the fans or the stadium or the presentation or the bananas or, the hot dog races or anything that would be a distraction. The simple fact for me to watch the game, it's better on TV because I see the strike zone. So they're and the strike zone's 98% of the game, kind of sort of, if you're really watching the game. So for me, watching it on TV, HD graphics, internet, the ability to opine and tweet back and forth with you in the game and all of that. There is a experiential part of it that's made the home thing far supersede going to games from an experiential standpoint for me to enjoy the game, not be annoyed by jack wagons, and then just the general cost of they make it really easy to get the game on satellite. They do.
Well, that's one area where I'm not joining you. I still believe and feel strongly that if it's a team is playing that you have a strong passion for, it's not the same watching it on television as it is being there. Like, I would much rather be at a Florida Gator football game than watch it on TV. Yes, do I lose out on seeing replays of controversial plays and other aspects that I don't get in the stadium, but it's still a feeling for me anyway of being there is something special. And I overlook all the crap that you talk about.
Yeah, I miss my seat. I mean, I had a seat that Marvin Lewis helped me. My seat was in the middle of the end zone, first row. Marvin back in 96 and 97 and Jim Schwartz are like, get the seats in the middle of the end. Get the seat next to where the coach's camera is, and you'll have the best angle in the stadium, the same angle we have. So my seat literally was next to the camera in the well in the first row in the middle of the end zone. So, I mean, I saw lines open up. Seeing the game on TV, I will agree with you that I don't see the secondary. I mean, having an all 22 is a better camera, a better view of the game. But we're getting to the point where I'm going to hit a button and there's going to be cameras all over the stadium. I'm going to get the camera view I want, right? I mean, there is a part of the modern sports that I do like. A replay. I think they should chip the football. You know what I mean? I'm liberal on and a lot of those kinds of things. I am big on fairness and just getting the call right. And because we're gambling on it now. I don't know if you notice, Chip, there's gambling involved too, a little bit on the television broadcasting. Like that's got to be the thing. Like if I would have said to you, hey, Chip, I'm from Baltimore. How's Warren's arm doing? Should I bet on the Oilers this week or not? You never would have given me a press pass, right? So, part of the insider trading on all of this stuff with the gambling thing, that is the biggest difference that if my dad came back to life and sat and watched the football game, he's like, oh my God, this gambling thing. And that's happened is in a blink. That's happened in the last 5 years.
Yeah, when I was working for teams, the NFL specifically told us, not to furnish information to fans for fantasy football leagues. I mean, they were so concerned with gambling. We used to have fans would call our offices, masquerading as writers. Someone would, my secretary would say, John Stedman's on the phone and he wants to know what the status of Alonzo Highsmith's injury is. I go, really? Let me put John through. And then I'd get on the phone and the guy, I'd say, oh, this is John Stedman from the Baltimore Sun. And I exposed the guy on the phone. I got a kick out of doing that. But people were calling and pretending to be masquerading as media members. And I'd take great joy in getting on the phone and saying, really, Mike Lupica, I happen to be a friend of yours, Mike. It's funny, you sound totally different now. But that's how that's how the NFL treated gambling back then. Don't give information to fans. Don't fantasy football is a form of gambling. That's a no-no. We had to sign documents that said we wouldn't participate as team employees in fantasy football leagues because that was considered a form of gambling, and you were here for violating the NFL's gambling policy.
My
So
buddy Rick Neuheisel went through that in Washington, filling out a pool card for basketball, right?
All that's changed, and obviously, the NFL. I mean, I'm stating the obvious, has embraced it and does sponsorships with it. And yes, if your father came back, he would certainly be stunned.
Well, I wrote down the word contentious that you said, and I would just say this: I don't know why. The people employed in Chad Steele's job, who you used to have your job, feel like it needs to be contentious. You know what I mean? You're like, it's contentious now. It just is. And I'm like, yeah, every time I walked in the building, I felt the energy change with this generation of people and this generation of owners and saying, I'm out to get you after 30 years? Really? Same guy here. I'm out to get you? That is the difference in it. is
I
that
don't know.
when I
I don't
meet young players
understand.
now, they're like, "You're media, you're rat poison," because Coach Saban told me that, my agent told me that, and my PR director tells me that. And I'm like, "Really? Like
I
that's."
don't understand. I mean, we could do another show separately, probably, and talk about your situation with the Ravens. I mean, I don't know the details, but I'll say this. Well, first of all, Chad Steele and the Ravens, apparently they were ABC and Jimmy Kimmel before ABC and Jimmy Kimmel. They were censoring, trying to exert censorship. But I don't understand, were there media members that I credentialed during my days in the NFL that I didn't like? Absolutely. Were there guys that I thought were out to get the team or only be negative? Absolutely. Would it ever cross my mind to try to prevent them from covering the event? Never, because if you're an accredited media member, even if I dislike you, and even if I dislike the way you do your job, and I think it's unprofessional, if you had as long as you have that valid accreditation, I will certainly defend your right to to be there and to be present and cover the team in whatever way you cover it, even though I may strongly disagree with it. I would never think of shutting you out or shutting you down. That just is not American, in my
And I
opinion.
would never think of being unprofessional with your name on a press credential because I have 8,000 of them sitting here over 45 years of doing this, right? So, like, I all that being said, it's mutual respect, right? Like, and that was implied in our era, and I was taught that by John Stebman and Ernie Accorsi and just all of those people who said this is the right way to do it, this is the wrong way to do it. But I knew the wrong way to do it was to lie on behalf of the team, and to say something's true that's not true. So, just all of that, and knowing the terms of how to do this in now an open environment where I always thought that John Harbaugh early on, when he didn't understand the internet existed, and when Jim Schwartz was telling me none of my guys on the Lions are going to tweet 15 years ago, and I think to myself, you're mad at me or Mike Preston. You should see what like is being said about you on the Barstool, just before the Barstool website. I'm talking about just you should see what they're saying on Facebook in 2008 about you, and how it's not nearly as dangerous as you think it is to have media people maybe better understand you or not in your corner, but at least can see your point of view and present it better than maybe you can.
Well, and obviously now a big part of it is if you're just like if you're a beat writer covering the Ravens and you just do your job like you did it 20 years ago and write what happened in practice today and have Ravens notes and little dot, 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 notes about what happened today. That's not going to get the covering the beat the way you covered the beat 20 years ago. That's not going to be outrageous enough to get you the kind of attention that your editors feel like you need to be getting. You've got to, you can't just do your job the old-fashioned way. You've got to, professional wrestling-asize it and make it, bigger and more controversial and more outrageous than the other guy, because this other guy is doing that and he's look at all the attention he's getting and you're not doing that. So, your voice gets drowned out. Unless you make it more outrageous. And that's kind of the way it is.
I've covered Lamar here for 7 years, and now Lamar's hurt, and they're everywhere on my time. Everybody nationally is a Ravens expert this week because at 1-3, they're one of the biggest stories in the country. Ravens taking on the Texans this week, which reminded me of the Oilers, which made me think of Chip Namius. So I wanted to talk Hollywood Bowl with you. I just want to say thank you for making me go. I have to wrap the segment in my time slot, but I just want to say thank you. It was one of the great nights of my memory that exceeded the expectations that were already very highly set at the Hollywood Bowl.
Well, I know you and I have talked about that for years. You've told me the Hollywood Bowl is on your bucket list. I mean, since Gary Kwazo was quarterbacking the Colts, I mean, it's been a long ass time. So,
Since Maddie had the wristband.
yes, I'm glad you finally got to go. I'm
Oh
glad it
man.
exceeded your
Steven
expectations.
Tyler walked out with Joe Perry, and it was like, I picked the right night. Because I had a dozen different nights I was going to go out there, but I picked the right. Next one's going to include fireworks up on the hill. Chip Namias is here, longtime PR director in sports in Hollywood and all sorts of places. He is my friend because we built relationships back in the day, even with whack jobs in Baltimore that had crazy radio shows that loved the Houston Oilers. So look out, football. Here we come. Houston Oilers. Number. Hey, if you need a plus one in Nashville, I'm your guy. I have a closet full of blue. I'm even going to get my Love You Blue belt buckle out. Love you, Chip. I appreciate you, man.
All right, Nestor. Good seeing you as always.
I'm glad you're on the mend, and good luck to your Gators. If you ain't a Gator, you're Gator bait. I'm Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.